Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Happy Pie Day, everyone.
Yay! Where's the pie?
We are going to talk about activity trackers so you can eat more pie.
And I'll show you her story as written by him.
And do we have your next password manager? We'll find out how you can find out.
Next on iOS Today. iOS Today is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/iOS. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/iOS today. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, your business, your online store. Enter the offer code iOS today and get 10% off. Squarespace, you should. Ah, fitness. It's such a good thing.
It is.
You're very fit.
Thank you.
You go to the gym every day?
I don't go to the gym
every
day.
You run a lot.
I run. I do some yoga. I lift weights. That's why it's hard with the activity trackers, because you need a different one for every activity, it seems.
And yet, I think there's a new level of fitness in the world because of activity trackers. It all started going way back. I remember when Kevin Rose told me about the Fitbit, and I can't remember if it was a Kickstarter. I think it was. And I signed up. The idea was it was a digital pedometer that would track your not only your steps, but it would track your sleep. It would somehow help you quantify your fitness performance. And I was so excited, and I signed up for it. I think it was $100. And I remember we had to wait months for it. That's why I think it might have been like a crowdsourced. It was before Kickstarter, though, so I'm not sure. Anyway, got it. It was a little pedometer. It was just like a pedometer you'd clip except on your belt, except instead of having a little weight and a clicky thing in it, it would communicate with your phone. Promptly lost it. Bought another one. Lost it again. I lost one in the San Diego Zoo. Hmm. Lost one in France. Lost one, I think, in the pipes underneath the house, if you know what I mean.
I think I do know what you mean.
So I was really glad when then fitness trackers moved to the jawbone up, and you could wear it around your mm-hmm. wrist. Jawbone had a little bit of a problem, though. They had to recall all of one of their ups, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So then other people were having itchy wrists.
Yeah, the rashes.
The nickel, mm-hmm. the rashes, mm-hmm. the jawbone rash.
We've been through a lot with the activity trackers.
You even have activity tracking underwear.
I do have an activity tracking underwear. We're going to talk about that pretty soon.
So the key, I think, though, is with all of these is, and we have a bunch of them to show you, is that they tie into your phone. And nowadays, usually with Bluetooth LE, which means you don't even have to pair them, somehow the phone just senses they're there. You open the app and it says, I see a new Fitbit. It pairs. And then it will monitor, without you even doing anything, monitor your performance. We're adding more things than just steps now. We've got heart rate monitors. And I hope someday, although it's yet to happen, we'll be able to see things like blood pressure. There are a couple that claim they can measure your VO2 max, your oxygen mm-hmm. use.
Yeah, the Microsoft Band claims that.
Yeah.
Do you not believe that?
Well, maybe. It seems like a hard thing to do through your skin, but okay. And a lot of these, in fact, almost all of them are not FDA devices. Mm-hmm. They don't require approval from the Food and Drug Administration. And they're very careful to skirt that. And my understanding is the rules are that as long as you're not making health recommendations, you don't have to get FDA approval, which means they don't have to actually say to the FDA, well, let me prove to you this is the accurate heart rate or the accurate VO2 max or the accurate steps. And in fact, one of the things that we know now because we've worn a lot of these is none of them match the other one.
Mm-hmm.
One of them might be right, but who knows? They don't. So what I think my conclusion on these is it's helpful mostly just because it says, don't forget, you know, get some exercise.
Yeah, it's just inspiring you. Let's start with the Apple Watch, which we talk about all the time on the show. But there's some...
It's the best. Would you agree?
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most expensive, but it is also, I think, the best. And we've talked about it a lot, but there are some features that maybe you would like to know about. So here, I use the activity.
Look how much nicer to start with it looks than the Microsoft
Band. The band, which you have to kind of.
The band looks like you're under house arrest. I'll be frank.
It does a little bit. Yeah. It's not as comfortable either. Well, we'll talk about the band in a little bit. I have some assumptions I'm going to make about the band. So I have the little activity app right on my watch face because I like to see how many circles. I don't have very many. I didn't do much of a workout today. So just basically, this is how many calories and my goal, how many minutes of exercise, how much I've stood up. But at any time, if you want more information, you can force touch it. So force touch, you'll get the weekly summary of how much you've done this whole week. So
that's either good news or bad news.
Yeah, it's not great news for me. As you can see, I do not go to the gym every day.
But just having this information is encouragement to do better next time, right?
Exactly, yes. And you can also force touch to get to change your move goal at any time, too. So if mine's 400 right now.
It calculated that automatically at first, right?
Yes. When you first get your Apple Watch, you put in your weight, you put in and how much activity you use on a day. You know how active you are, how active you want to be, and then if you get higher, it'll suggest that your number should be higher. If you're lower, it'll suggest maybe you should go back down to 200.
So it does that one automatically, but it also has an app. If you launch, you press the button and you launch the little green running man, that's the activity app. And you see I had a recent activity.
That's the workout app.
Yeah, workout it's called, not activity, yeah. And what I do like about this is it gives you some choices of activities. Almost all of these are decent pedometers. In fact, the Apple Watch is probably the best pedometer because it suggests you calibrate it by taking a 20-minute walk outdoors. It then uses the GPS to know how far you walked, how fast you walked. It can calculate your stride from that. And after that, the indoor walk stats are pretty good. Notice it has cycling, rower, outdoor walk, outdoor cycle, other. It has runs, it has elliptical, and it has stair stepper. I look for this in any of these fitness bands is the ability to use other, because I don't run and I don't really walk. I do the indoor walk as a treadmill, but I do spinning, I do rowing, I do Pilates, and those things are harder for these things to measure. Mm-hmm. They're all good at steps. What makes the Apple Watch, I think, one of the best ones is it has an accurate heart rate monitor. Mm-hmm. And so when you choose something like rowing, there's no steps. So it can't say, well, you took 1,000 steps. It can't say how far you went. The rower knows, but the Apple Watch doesn't know unless it's somehow connected to the rower. But it does know your heart rate. And so because it's the only one I found that accurately measures heart rate, not only at rest, but at higher, this is where it's hard, at higher levels, I find it's fairly useful in saying how many calories are expended, how hard you worked out. Of course, all of this is an estimate. But to me, it's the most useful. And I'll sit there in my spin class, and a lot of books will agree, monitoring your heart rate is the best way to know when you're in the appropriate zone, when you're in an aerobic workout zone, when you're in an anaerobic workout zone. You want to kind of stay in an aerobic zone, ideally. And so you need the heart rate monitor to give you that information. This puts it on big, bright characters, does continual monitoring. And as I'm on my little bike there, I can look. In fact, my instructor will sometimes come over and tap my watch and say, let me see what you're doing. He says, you know, keep it under 400. That's good. And because that would kill you. But the other thing that's really good to know is when you're in your zone, how much you are. And at the end of the workout, it'll say how much, what your average heart rate was, what your maximum was, how long you were in your zone, when you were out of your zone. And that's all, I think, genuinely useful information, even for a trainer to have. So for that reason, this is usually my go-to in terms of working out. But there are lots of other choices.
There are, yeah. I mean, and, you know, just delving a little bit, you can get more information on the app.
You go to
the
health
phone.
App,
yeah,
right?
the activity app.
Or the activity
on your phone,
app, okay.
Which you'll only have if you have an Apple Watch. If you don't have an Apple Watch,
you
won't
have
graphs.
That. Yeah.
So yeah, so it's it shows you. So this is one of my other workouts, which is yoga that I do,
and that's heart rate.
That is all heart rate. I'm not moving around at all. So, you know, it tells me the amount of time and the total inactive time. I guess that's total inactive time for the day. But, yeah, it'll tell you throughout the day. So that was my yoga class there. And then, you know,
I like that, too, because it is important to remember that it's not just your workout in the morning that you need to keep track of. You want to be active all day, and you are active all day. And these things are really useful for reminding you, you know, maybe you should take the stairs. I first started experiencing that with a Nike Fuel Band, which would do a wonderful little animation mm-hmm. when you reached your step goal. And because of that, I was always interested in like, oh, I'm so close. I just need to get a few. So I would take the stairs. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, was very valuable.
That is valuable. The hard part, I think, is that it encourages me to do more running and less yoga or less other exercise where I'm not moving around, which I don't necessarily think that's healthy.
No, your workout routine shouldn't be determined by what the sensors are capable of. Mm-hmm. And right now, the sensors are mostly capable of steps. So running and walking is really favored on almost all of these fitness devices. But that's why I look for heart rate. I can't wait till VO2 max becomes reliable. Blood pressure becomes reliable. Then none of them can measure calories, but all of them make an estimate if they know heart rate on how many calories you might have burned. Mm-hmm. But that's all kind of guessing.
Yeah. So can I show you the device that measures a little more of what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, it's called the Ohm Smart Bra. And Tony is here to model it for us.
Thank God. I was a little nervous at first.
No, I'm not going to be
Tony
taking
Wang
shirt off
is wearing in not only a hula skirt. Wow, that's jazzy.
So
that is a jazzy brassiere.
It does not, unfortunately, come with the skirt, just the bra, which they sent me this. And here, this is the measuring device right here. It comes off.
Oh, okay. And now Lauren Good said that chafed her a little bit.
I've been wearing it for about a month, so it's not totally available yet. They have an Ohm shirt for men or for women who wear tight shirts. But I did not experience any chafing.
So you clip that on. And is it a... Because, you know, it looks like it's just a chest band.
Yes,
I mean, I've worn chest bands for years on exercise bicycles and treadmills.
Yeah, like a heart rate. And that's where you're supposed to keep the monitor that close to you, right? So let me show you what the app will show you. So it's still in a beta, as we discussed. It's available spring. But so we can... Oh, I've been measuring your...
OM?
OM, yes. So I can see a live... So Tony's heart rate's 88.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
His 44. His daily calories,
but
according to
I just want to point out that you could go out and buy a polar chest band and a polar watch and get exactly this information without wearing a bra that looks like a pink leopard.
I actually like the bra, and it comes in different colors.
Okay. expensive, though, right?
It's $149.
Yeah.
So, okay, there are advantages to having the tracker built into your clothing.
Yeah.
The advantage is you don't have to have another thing, right?
Right.
The disadvantage is you can't wear it every day. I mean, you're going to unless you do laundry every day.
Can you wash it or you take the clip off?
You wash it. But if you're going to track your workout every day, yes. And the replacement ones are $59. But here, let me tell you a secret about women's exercise clothes.
Oh, I'd like to hear this.
We tend to spend that much money. I'm not everyone.
Sure. If you go to Lululemon, you're going to be out $500. Like
exactly.
That.
Because, you know, it's like paying a lot for a gym.
Right.
You know, you pay money for exercise. I actually think the fit was quite nice.
And it was comfortable?
Yes. My biggest complaint was that I couldn't track my workout every day. And it's another thing that you have to charge. So that has a, you know, USB, micro USB that you have to charge, and you can forget to charge it. And
I will say this. It's very important in almost all the exercise books I see. Say this, to monitor your heart rate during exercise. Not because you don't want to kill yourself, but just this very valuable feedback on what kind of exercise you're getting. I'm looking at a polar chest rate, heart rate monitor, $55. So it's roughly the same price as that connector on there. It probably is very similar technology, minus the bra.
I don't know if it does live, like, recovery testing and breathing. Does the polar does your breath and all your biometrics and everything?
No, that's what this does?
This does biometrics during your workout. So, like what you were saying, it'll tell you if you've reached... I'll show you an example of what it did in a workout I did yesterday. So if we can show my screen. I wore this. I just did a quick workout, and it showed me which... So for 58% of the time, I was in the zone 2 fat burning.
Yeah, but see, okay, so I just want to point out that this is all calculated based on heart rate. Does it measure anything else? It measures
breathing rate.
Does it feel constricting on your chest a little bit?
It does not feel constricting.
How does it know?
How does it know? I don't. Does it feel? Oh, are you asking Tony?
Well, you wear it too.
Well, Tony, that one fits. Was designed to fit me. It's my size, not Tony's size.
It's a little tight,
and you're a man, so you're shaped differently than a woman.
Tony's your cup size, but he's a different chest size, I think.
Right, right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, I have to compliment you, Leo. You're doing quite well.
I did so well right up to that point.
You were doing so well. So, the Ohm Smart Bra or Smart Shirt for the men.
Okay. I probably, instead of buying that, would just buy a Polar. The other reason I would get the Polar is because a lot of the gym equipment you might use, including treadmills, stair steppers, ellipticals, most of them will support that, so you can get the heart rate right on the readout. And these new Polars are Bluetooth LE, so they will go to your phone as well. Where the phone, the app would probably make similar calculations. I'm curious about the breathing. So does it actually, do you feel like it, have you kind of looked and see if it measures your breathing accurately?
It does. Here's another screenshot.
So it must
be
the rise and fall expansion.
Like when I tested it here. Yeah. I did a little test.
So that would be useful.
Yeah.
So the Polar does not do that.
So, a little bit more biometrics also for runs, it's quite nice. For runs, because it tells you a lot of information. And then there's like a tracking, a blog. Let's see if I can find this.
Assessing readiness.
Here I uploaded my running information so it can tell
me
my
pace. Wow, that's you. Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, my pace, my stride length, my cadence. A little bit different.
Again, because it's tying into the phone, it can tell things like stride length because it has the GPS built in. That's pretty good. I really do look for trackers that give us more information than just steps or heart rate. I mean, that's kind of the fundamental. Everybody can do that. Not everybody can do it well, by the way.
Right. I think, tracking your breathing is helpful in yoga, I think.
Yeah. We have a device here that tracks your breathing.
Okay. Here's what the Smart Bra looks like, not on a man.
Is there a reason? I guess you had to have a guide demo. You really couldn't have
did have some video of it, and that accidentally got deleted for some reason. I'm not sure why. And I was going to wear it and show with a shirt on over it. Ah. I was going to show, but...
Oh, it's all right. This is good enough.
Yes.
It's good enough.
And I am impressed.
I get
impressed.
The idea.
I'm impressed. You had ample opportunity for many jokes there that you did not take advantage
of. That's biting my tongue.
You're really growing.
I am.
Thanks.
I am growing. Someday I hope to be a mature human being. Probably when I die. So this, you talked me into getting this. Actually, I saw this over and over again on Facebook. They bought a lot of Facebook ads. This is the Spire. And it comes from Respire because it supposedly does measure the ins and outs of your breathing. I don't know how it does or how well it does. I stopped using it after a few days because it was uncomfortable. You put it inside your belt so that it's up against your belly.
You can also attach it to your bra. I tried it for a while too, and you can attach it right to the
middle. Now the point of this was not so much exercise, but to encourage stress relief, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, tell me about your experience.
I thought that it worked, and it did. It measured something. It showed.
It measures something. That's about the best we can say.
Yeah, I know. We talked about it on the show when it first came out, and it was interesting. But again, it wasn't so comfortable. And it's another thing you have to remember to charge.
Yeah.
And although it will go through the laundry, like if you accidentally leave it attached to your clothes, you're supposed to be able to do that.
It's really beautiful. I mean, this is the nicest looking device. And what happens is you'll get alerts on your phone saying, you breathe, relax, you're getting stressed.
Right.
I find that stressful.
Yeah.
But look at this is the charging pad. You just put it on there. It's inductive charging. You don't have to plug it in. You just keep that plugged in. And it's kind of like a like little cork. It's beautifully designed. But it doesn't measure steps. Mm-hmm. It doesn't measure anything but breathing, right? And that's how it concludes what your stress level is.
Does it not measure steps? I thought it did measure steps. But again, your phone measures steps.
It monitors your breathing.
Okay. So.
So I don't know. Yeah, and mostly digging into my tummy.
Yeah.
I don't really like that so much.
Too.
Spire.io, if you'd like to know more about it. It is, they say, backed by 7 years of research.
And if you just want to be reminded to breathe, I think the last time we talked about it, someone wrote in to say, I have one.
There's
it
apps.
Reminds me to breathe. I love it.
There's apps for that. It reminds you to breathe.
because if you forget, there's
now,
trouble.
Now, I have a kind of a little bit of an addiction to these things.
You
I have
do.
All of them. I bought the Jawbone Up when it first came out. I bought the, as I mentioned, the Nike. And I bought the original Fitbit. I think Fitbit is currently the market leader. And these are the two most recent Fitbits here. This is the President's Watch. This is the Fitbit Surge. This is the most expensive of the two, $350, because it has a GPS built into it. Both of these have an advantage over the Apple Watch, which is multi-day battery life. The Fitbit, what is this called? The Blast?
The Blaze.
Blaze. The Fitbit Blaze has a five-day, and really does have five-day battery life. It's kind of interesting. This is the newest one. A little less expensive, which is nice. And what's interesting about it, it pops out. And so when you charge it, you just charge it like you would any other Fitbit, which means you could wear it in another area. You could put it in your bra or something. And then so this band is just an accessory in effect. But, Rene Ritchie mocked how ugly it was. But I think actually this did a very good job. Its measurement of the heart rate was good. It is a real watch. They have four different watch faces. If you tap the date, you can see your heart rate in real time. You also can get notifications. It's a little bit like, I don't have any notifications right now, but it's a little bit like a Pebble, mm-hmm. where it's kind of got limited notifications. But when your phone rings, it lets you know. You also have a little player, so you can start your music and stop your music. You really do want to tie it to the phone. It doesn't have any GPS built in. It will give you your—I haven't done much today—your steps, your heart rate for the day, how far you've gone, how many calories you've burned, how many active hours, very much like the Apple Watch. I find it to be a very accurate heart rate meter. They're all using roughly the same thing. These blinking green lights on the back actually measure your heart rate by piercing through your skin and illuminating the blood flow beneath. This, like the Apple Watch, is best when worn about 2 inches above your wrist bone and fairly tight. They say that day to day, you probably don't want to wear it like that. It'd be uncomfortable. So tighten it up during exercise and then loosen it up during the rest of the day. It does come with a rubber. The rubber band is easily washable. A couple of things I do like about this. Let me go back to the user interface. It has a variety of exercises, much like the Apple Watch does. But it is mostly good. This is biking, by the way, is outdoor biking. That's when it'll use the GPS to keep track of, uses the phone GPS to keep track of where you are. It'll show distance traveled again through the phone, but also it'll show how fast and so forth. Weights, that's pure heart rate, right? Treadmill. Again, pure heart rate and steps in this case. Workout is just that's the one you use. It's kind of the generic, just watch your heart rate. And it does have spinning, but I'm not sure how spinning is different than workout. You're not traveling any distance, so I think it's just doing the heart rate. Heart rate's very accurate on this. I like that. Lags a little bit, though. So the Apple Watch is remarkable. It really pretty much is right on the whole time. This I found maybe 30 seconds later when you start a big spin or a faster sprint. Then 30 seconds later, your heart rate will go up. So this takes a little bit longer to measure it. But the thing I found most useful about the Fitbit Blaze is it shows you it's constant heart rate measurement, and it shows you your resting heart rate. And that's a really important stat. In fact, it's one that I've been very encouraged by because as I've exercised a lot in the last 6 months, my resting heart rate's gone down about 10 beats per minute. And that's a good measurement of overall fitness. You want your heart rate, your resting heart rate, to be under 70, around 70 or less. And it went down to 66, and I only know that because of this. So I find that very, very helpful. This is the slightly more expensive, as I mentioned, Blaze. Battery's dead because both of these have kind of proprietary charging. This one you plug in a special little cable. Same heart rate measurement. Fitbit's been sued for being inaccurate in its heart rate measurement. I don't know what the upshot of that case is. The particular complaint was that at higher heart rates, it wasn't accurate. And Fitbit is, I think that that's probably the case. But they're using the same technique, as far as I can tell, as Apple is. So it's got to be software. And that means it could be improved.
Yeah.
So, but I think I really like Fitbit in many ways. And in fact, the Blaze, I think, is probably the closest thing to the Apple Watch that I've found. They have this new Alta, which I think is trying to be a little more stylish. maybe four women. It's also a watch, and one of the things I really like about the Fitbit Blaze is it's a watch that's always on. I mean, it actually works as a watch and a calendar, which is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to buy an Apple Watch, but you're looking for much of the same functionality, I think the Fitbit Blaze or the Surge is probably the next best thing.
Yeah, and we're going to hopefully hear about some new Apple Watch bands at the upcoming
Yeah, I don't think they're going to. Do you think that? I don't.
Models.
We don't know.
That's, yeah, we don't.
Oh,
yeah.
By the way, we should mention that next week we will be right after the Apple event. So iOS Today
we'll
be talking a lot about what Apple had to say. The invitations went out. No, I didn't get one. Did you get one?
No.
No, you didn't get one?
I mean, I'm sure it got lost in the mail.
Yet. But the good news is Renee Ritchie got one. I think Andy got one. So we'll have people in the event, but we'll also do live coverage. I hope you'll join me. 10 a.m. Pacific next week on the 21st for Apple's event. And, yeah, we'll hear new watch bands and some other stuff. So, you know, the Fitbit app is a great app. I use a Y-Things also. I have a Y-Things scale and a Y-Things blood pressure monitor. Those are very accurate. And those also will go into Apple Health. So it's a nice thing to have all of that in there. And I have to say, with the Y-Things app, there's nothing more encouraging than to see your weight go down bit by bit. And it shows you an actual graph of that. I should show you, but I don't have it here. And that's encouraging. It also, if you're doing your blood pressure, which I am, it'll show you the graph of your blood pressure over time. One of the things about blood pressure, it's very hard to measure, and of course, none of these watches do it. And it changes wildly throughout the day. So, for instance, when you first get up, for some reason, your blood pressure, at least mine is, and I think this is common, much higher than normal than it will be during the rest of the day. So ideally, you'd want something, and this is where this could really excel, to measure your blood pressure many times throughout the day, and then you could see what your actual average is. This is the blood pressure cuff that Y-Things sells. It ties in by Bluetooth to your smartphone. Does a good job. And also because it's easy to use, it kind of encourages you to do multiple measurements throughout the day.
Now, why can't they put this in a watch? Because you can't measure it down there?
Well, the way these cuffs work is just like the sphygmomanometer at the doctor's.
Right.
It pumps air in.
Yeah.
And it gets very tight, constricts your blood vessels, and then slowly lets the air out and measures two different, your systolic and your diastolic pressure as it's letting the air out. So I don't know how you would measure, and I wish Dr. Mom were in our chat room right now, because I just don't know how you would do it with a little device. You can't obviously pump up the air pressure, so I don't. Every blood pressure monitor I've used does that.
All right. Well,
it would be really nice to know. You know, one more thing, as long as we're talking. The next generation of wearables, I think, is going to be in your ear. You're wearing headphones when you run.
Mm-hmm.
It's trivial to measure steps and heart rate because as you get deeper into your ear, the membrane between your blood, the skin is very thin, so the device can get right close to the blood, get very accurate. It can do VO2 max for sure in the ear. And I've talked to people who said, oh, yeah, we can do blood pressure. We can do other things. So I think the next generation of these will be more functional and will be in ear.
What if that's what they're going to announce at the Apple event? Because they said, let us loop you in. What if it's a loop that goes around
right.
your ear?
Somebody's saying they make wrist blood pressure monitors. They do. And they inflate. And I don't think you want to wear a wristwatch that inflates. and suddenly you're like, pump, 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 pump.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the Pebble. I also tried the Pebble. Our model, Tony, is now wearing the Pebble that we bought. And that's fine. It's great. He likes it. But and then we also have the Microsoft Band 2, which I reviewed last year when it came out. Like we already said, it's not beautiful. I think the battery might have also run out on this one. Yep.
I think really it's the case that all of these are just glorified pedometers.
Yeah, this one, I mean, one thing you got to give to Microsoft is it started out at $250. It's now $174. So I think they get an idea. They have an idea of how much it is.
And this is
the
second generation, so
yes.
They have improved it. I mean,
they have improved it.
It is better. And it wasn't banned to begin with. I think this is a credible first effort from Microsoft.
And I think that if you, it's Alex uses this one too. This everybody inherits all of the fitness trackers that we try. Alex inherited this one, and he is a Windows guy, and he has a Windows phone, and so
right.
it works better
Makes
for
sense.
Him. Although it does
yeah.
have an iOS app. And I wonder if Microsoft is just trying to get the data from people, and they're not really interested in getting into like the wearable.
That's an interesting thesis.
That's my theory. That's my hot take.
Could be.
They're not really thinking they're going to beat Apple at the fitness wearable game. They just want this information and how right. people are using wearables.
Fitness bands are in many ways a revolution. They're also in many ways overhyped.
Yes.
I think if you're the right kind of person to have that subtle encouragement on your wrist that get out and get some more exercise really can be a huge benefit. And I've talked to so many people who've gotten so much out of that. A lot of them say the Apple Watch got them in shape for the first time in their life. So I think that it's certainly worthy of trying, whether you should spend $350 on one or get an inexpensive Fitbit that does 90% of it first and see if you like it. That might be a better idea.
Yeah. I think it's like paying for the gym or paying for expensive exercise clothes. Like, our health is important, and if we have the money, we will tend to...
You know what I always say? Cheaper than heart surgery.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've done our workout. Now let's sit around and read some magazines. What do you think?
Oh, thank gosh.
Take a break.
You know, it's nice, though, when you have your iPad, and I always take my iPad with me when I go work out, to have some magazines on there if you're sitting on the bike. I watch Lisa. That's how she does. She uses Texture. It's great. Texture is like Netflix for magazines. I want you to go to texture.com/iOS, and you could try this for free. One app, all you can read. It is the full magazine. I want to emphasize this. Not only the one that's on the newsstand today, but back issues as well. All of the best magazines. There's additional material, though, that you can't put video on the newsstand. You can in Texture. So there's a lot of extra stuff. Consumer Reports is in there. I subscribe to Consumer Reports, but after a while, you subscribe to a bunch of magazines. I used to subscribe to National Geographic and Rolling Stone and The New Yorker. And after a while, you got a pile of paper, a lot of clutter, and a lot of guilt because, I'll be frank, I can't read these cover to cover. And I feel like there's great stuff, and I never... With this, there's no guilt. Because there almost always is one article, at least for me, I want to read in Rolling Stone or Vanity Fair. There's always images I want to look at in National Geographic. And so the idea that I don't have to subscribe to the magazine or buy one on the newsstand to do that is great. They even make it easy with curated collections around particular topics. So if you're interested in reading more about the 2016 presidential election, they'll give you a category with content from a bunch of different magazines. You'll discover new magazines, everything from Forbes to People. Yes, I read the gossip magazines too, and I don't want to buy them. But at the same time, I got a little time. Sometimes I like to find out what's going on with Gwen and Blake. I mean, is that the real deal? Is she pregnant? What's going to happen in there? The Kardashians, what's the deal? So now you can do it without any guilt. You just all on your iPad. I'll tell you, if you've got a flight coming up, if you like to read in the gym, this is the greatest thing ever. Flat rate, all the magazines you want, all on your iPad, your iPhone. What could possibly be wrong with that? Texture.com/iOS. Try it free right now, and then you'll get an idea of all the great stuff that you can do. Texture.com/iOS.
So the news this week, we already talked a little bit about the event that will be happening next Monday.
And we'll be here.
So 4-inch iPhone.
You don't have to be here, but I would hope you would.
I will be watching it.
Are you going to be, because you got to get the kids to school and stuff. I may not be the best timing, right?
What time does it start?
10 a.m.
No, yeah, I'm here by 10 a.m. I'm here preparing, okay. Starting at 7 a.m. every morning.
I would laugh at that, except I'm never here till 11:15, so
true.
I have no idea.
But, I like to watch it. I mean, I'll come and I'll talk. I'll sit at the desk with you and we can talk about it, but I always feel like I'm talking over the important stuff.
Well, that's the trick, is to find the unimportant stuff and talk over that.
Okay, well, let's be there.
Follow my lead.
Okay. I'll talk about the unimportance. Yeah. I'll talk over
and
the unimportance.
What we always say is if you want to watch, I don't know if Apple's streaming this or not. They usually do, at least lately. But so we always will give you the URL if you want to just watch the edited Apple feed. But I think it's kind of it's kind of fun for us to watch it as you do, as fans, but also as experts, and talk about, oh, this is interesting, we didn't expect that. And we'll have experts with us as well, so it's not just you and me.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC for the Apple Spring 2016 event. Again, we expect a new iPhone, a 4-inch iPhone with the iPhone 6 guts, but a 4-inch size.
And the curved edges.
You think?
I think curved.
That's
edges.
What they're talking about.
I don't think that there'll be square edges like.
Wait a
this.
Minute. What do you mean, like curved, like the curved screen on the
curved
Galaxy
like,
S7?
Curved like this. Curved like the 6.
So it'll look like a 6.
It'll
not
be
square.
The size of a 5.
Not the boxy.
The body of a 6. The mind of a 6S.
No, actually, the mind of a 6. We think not the 6S.
Right. No force touch.
Yeah. No, well.
3D touch.
Now there. I think one. We were talking about this on Twitter, and I think it was Nathan Olivares Giles from the Wall Street Journal said they have to have force touch.
Mm.
That is the new UI.
Mm.
One thing that probably won't have force touch, the new iPad. Remember, they didn't announce new iPads in the fall, so we're due. And the rumor mill says it'll be a new iPad, but not an iPad Air. It'll be a new iPad Pro in the iPad Air size, a 10-inch iPad Pro. That means no force touch, but it does mean, yes, ma'am.
Pencil. You got a pencil, too.
I bought a pencil for I'm hoping to do it because I bought it for the new iPad. Because the iPad Pro I like. It's great for this show because it's so big, but I don't like carrying it around. I'd love a 10-inch iPad Pro. I'd love to have the drawing and the writing. All the features of the iPad Pro, the better sound. The sound is phenomenal on the iPad Pro.
Yeah.
But I'd like to have it in a 10-inch size. So.
All right. So
we'll see. We'll talk about it. And watch bands, as you mentioned.
Yes. The encryption debate continues. A few weeks ago, I said what we all needed was John Oliver to come on.
Did he do it?
He did it, to come on and do a show.
Was that Sunday?
Yeah. It was whatever. It was this week. I think it was last night or the night before.
Yeah.
So he said a lot of funny things. You got to watch it. John Oliver last week tonight.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
He is hilarious.
So
he explains everything. He explained net neutrality.
It's on HBO, but don't they post it usually on YouTube?
They did. And here's my favorite clip. I think we have it. There we go.
There are over 175 other phones in line just in New York. So this is bound to set a precedent. Think of the government as your dad. If he asks you to help him with his iPhone, be careful. Because if you do it once, you're going to be doing it 14 times a day.
So there are many zingers like that in his typical John Oliver way. Because I really feel like the average person, he did it for net neutrality, and hopefully he'll convince the average person.
He's done a good job. Did he come down on the side of Apple refusing?
He did.
Yeah.
On Apple. Yeah, he comes on down
Apple
on the side of Apple.
Saying,
yeah.
No, we're not going to do this.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah.
You saw
much.
The president at South by Southwest. He spoke on, I think it was Saturday or maybe it was Friday.
Yeah, Friday.
He says we shouldn't fetishize these phones. Why should we make these phones some sort of special object, with a lawful warrant from a, duly deputized law enforcement? Everything can be searched and should be searched as long as the court says, yeah, there's probable cause. Why should the phone be any different from that? And that's an interesting point. In fact, a point I don't disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm sure Apple will comply if they're ordered to do so by the court, and I'm sure they'll appeal. But if finally the Supreme Court says, no, Apple, you got to do it, Apple will comply because we live in a society of laws, and the rule of law is one of the things that makes us a great country. It's a necessary thing. We all agree that we will obey the law, and we might protest it, we might appeal it, but in the long run, if the courts say unlock that phone, Apple will reluctantly have to do it. But I think that the larger issue isn't phones, and I think this is where President Obama kind of got it wrong. He's saying, we gotta work together, we gotta compromise, we gotta find a solution together, because it can't be that this phone is somehow some special object. It isn't about the phone, Mr. President, and of course politics is the art of compromise, the art of negotiation, and the president is a politician of necessity. Congress is political. Even courts, to some degree, are political. But it is not a matter of politics. It's a matter of math, unfortunately. And math is not negotiable. Math is or is not. 2 + 2 is always 4. It can't equal 3 or 5, no matter how much we sit down at the table and negotiate. And encryption is math. And unfortunately, for the president and law enforcement, the math is out there. It's done. It's easily understood and widely known how to do strong encryption. Encryption so strong that law enforcement can't break it, period. And you can make a law that forces every American smartphone to have a back door or to be unencryptable or somehow have access for law enforcement. And I guess that law will probably be made. That's my best guess. Doesn't take encryption out of anybody's hands. This is the most important thing to understand. Encryption is still in everybody's hands, including all the bad guys. If the bad guys want to go dark, they can go dark. And there's nothing you can ever do about it. And unfortunately, we've already fought this war. Stephen Levy wrote a great piece on Medium a couple of days ago. He wrote the book on the crypto wars in 2001 during the Clinton administration. You may remember that the Clinton administration banned the export of encryption, saying it was munitions, that the bad guys shouldn't have encryption. It kind of ignored the fact that public key crypto was invented in the 70s and widely understood worldwide before then. But he said, Stephen Levy talks about fighting this war, and a war we ultimately won, but we didn't win without a price, because Netscape, which was the browser of the day, in order to have encryption, have encrypted websites, had to put 40-bit keys in its browser. That was because anything stronger was illegal to send over the borders. And, of course, if you're Netscape, you can't control who gets your browser. So they made one version of the browser with 40-bit keys for HTTPS, for secure HTTP. And today, 20 years later, we're still suffering with insecurity over SSL because of those 40-bit keys. So that law, and there's nobody, of course they can pass a law, and they did, that law, we know what will happen. It won't stop bad guys. It won't stop encryption. It'll just make it insecure for normal people. It'll help hackers. It'll help the bad guys, not hurt them. And I hope that Congress and the courts and the president hear that message. It's not negotiable because it's done. And there's nothing you can do to put the egg back in the eggshell. It's the egg's open. It's cracked. How it doesn't matter what your position is, what my position is, what your position is. It's done. So anything that you do to prevent the encryption of smartphones, for instance, will do nothing to hurt bad guys and will do everything to hurt normal people who will then be insecure because bad guys will be able to attack our phones. You're helping the bad guys is the point. I don't know if he'll hear that message. I'm sure people have told him that. But as most politicians, they believe everything's negotiable. In this case, it's the math. It's not negotiable. That's my opinion.
Yeah. And now the battle is kind of moving on to WhatsApp.
They're going to try to do the same thing with WhatsApp.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it onesie-twosie. You know, you can break WhatsApp. Sure. You can do it by law. And mm-hmm. WhatsApp is owned by Facebook. It's a U.S. company. They'll have to comply.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you can't use Wire or Signal or hundreds of other secure messaging apps that are just as opaque and not under the rule of U.S. law. What are you going to do? Build a big wall?
Mm-hmm.
Right? In fact, we were talking about Wire. Wire is just in a big update. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it does use strong OTR encryption, which is, it's an open source product using open source technologies. And it allows, just like WhatsApp, even better, in my opinion, encryption than WhatsApp, for voice, for video, and for text. And that's from Switzerland. So they may win against WhatsApp. So what do the bad guys do? They use Wire. But even worse, now they can spy on us on WhatsApp. The bad guys can.
Yeah. So Wire.
Don't be depressed. It's okay.
It's okay. We're okay. Constantly giving away the contents of our iPhones and iPads every day anyway.
Isn't secure. Your phone is not. I'm holding up, unfortunately, an Android phone. But but neither the Android nor iPhone is secure. We know that the iCloud, that Apple holds the keys to the iCloud backup.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that is on iCloud, everything that you put on iCloud is available to law enforcement. And Apple will gladly will give...
They may be unhappy,
but if there's a warrant, they will give it to law enforcement. They have in the past, and they will continue to do so because they have the key.
Mm-hmm.
You have a key, but they know what the key is. And that's sometimes, that's the case with a lot of cloud backup stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a fan. People get mad at me when I say this. And somebody tweeted me, well, how could you say you have no privacy? I'm not saying that you have no privacy. I'm saying don't count on anything you put on the internet being private.
Yeah.
That would be an error.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying it's what is. People, unfortunately, get all caught up with what they'd like to have happen, as the president has, versus, unfortunately, the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Facts is facts.
Facts is facts. So do you think they even know what audiobooks I'm listening to?
They do. You know, that's a, by the way, that's called metadata. And that's, anybody can get that. That's widely available. Man, I know who you talk to, when you talk to them. This is the truth. This is the other side of this. And then we'll do the Audible ad. And law enforcement knows this. They know more about us than ever before. Just because I could send you an unencrypted message doesn't mean they don't know I sent you a message.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, frankly, more important. The network of people you talk to is more important than what you're saying in many cases.
Right. And if you think about all the Internet of Things devices that we have, it's everywhere.
We've got Echoes in our house. We got TVs that listen to us. If all it takes is a warrant to Amazon to say, hey, would you, I'd like to hear what that Echo's hearing. That's a scary thought. You know what? Read a good book. Relax. Actually, mm-hmm. there's a lot about this on Audible.com if you want. Audible is a wonderful place. It's a bookstore, full bookstore, 180,000 books, all the new stuff. And yes, there's a ton of fiction. And we were talking before the show about my favorite science fiction author, Neal Stephenson's newest Seven Eves, which I'm listening
to.
It's really good. If you like sci-fi, it's hard sci-fi, but not hard to read, but lots of science in it. And I love that stuff. I'm also a big fan, and Audible has all of Peter F. Hamilton's books, and I'm a huge fan of his stuff. But there's also a lot of nonfiction. There's history. I'm listening to the Alexander Hamilton biography by Chernow right now. It's fantastic, and you can tell it's the inspiration for Hamilton the musical. All of it's in there. There's so many. The Help is a good example. That's one of the books that is a performance on Audible. You see all those readers. That it comes to life. Octavia Spencer's in the book, reads the book. It's incredible. If you loved the movie, you will even more. You will love the book. Audible books are movies in your mind. Your mind is always a better set designer, costume designer, storyteller than any movie ever could be. It has an unlimited budget. And when you're listening to a book, it comes to life. Forget watching the TV show 112263. Listen to the book, the Stephen King book on Audible. It's wonderful. So here's the deal. I'm going to get you a free book. If you've never tried Audible, I understand you might say, oh, there's Gary Vee's new book. I read some of that. I'm on there. Jack Welch is also on there. And Dave Ramsey. Don't see my name on that list, but I did read some of the questions. I have a bit part on that book. Here's the deal. You may say, I'm driving. I would love to listen to a book, but am I going to be able to pay attention? Am I going to hear the book? Is it going to be as good as reading the book? And I know you want to try that. So here's the deal. We'll get you a free book at no cost, no risk to you, and you see if it works for you. Go to audible.com/iOS today, audible.com/iOS today. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's the book a month plan. Your first month is free. Your first book is free. You also get the daily digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times read to you. That's part of your subscription. You cancel in the first any time in the first 30 days. The book is yours to keep, but you pay nothing. So this is a really risk-free way to see if its audiobooks are right for you. I love doing this, and I highly encourage you, even if you think, I don't know if I'm going to like this. How to Bake Pie, an edible exploration of the mathematics of mathematics. That's a good one for Pi Day.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. I learn a lot from Audible. They have the great courses, so college lectures from the best lecturers in the world on very abstruse subjects. I mean, you know, Einstein's relativity, quantum mechanics, the history of the Middle Ages, all sorts of great stuff. You know, if it weren't for Audible, I have to say, I'm just grateful. Oh, that's a good one. The Girl on the Train. Did you read that?
I did read that.
Oh,
and
isn't that a good book?
You know what I did with that? I both read it and listened to it.
You could do that with WhisperSync,
mm-hmm.
right?
I did, yeah. So you could, you know, when you're in the car or running, yeah. listen. And then when you want to snuggle up in bed and read the
isn't
book.
Isn't that
great? Both.
It's nice, yeah. Audible.com/iOS today. Your first one's free. Try it right now. You will love it. You will.
All right. How many digits of pi do you know?
3.14159.
That's where I get stuck.
Well, it's five. The mnemonic is how I want a drink, alcoholic, of course, after the heavy chapters on quantum mechanics. That would get you 14.
Impressive.
So how is 3, I 1, want 4, A 1, drink 5, alcoholic 9, of 2, course 5, C-O-U-R-S-E 6, alcoholic course after 5, the 3, heavy. This is a mnemonic I learned in school, heavy chapters on quantum mechanics. 3.14159265 4, and on. Actually, 2654 is rounding up.
I love Pi Day. Last year, of course, was the big Pi Day because it was 2015. But
3.1. And it only works in the U.S. where we put the month, day,
right.
year.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in their normal, in their right minds, puts day, month, year. But for us, it's just an excuse to order some pie.
Mm-hmm.
Did we get pie yet? I was told there'd be pie.
I was told there'd be pie, too. Okay, so we got some feedback from you.
Do you know what pi is?
The mathematical equation.
Do you know what that number means?
It's the circumference of something when the cycle and the something else, and it's really important.
It's the ratio. Let me see if I can get it.
Okay, laugh at me. And what?
It's the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference.
Yes.
Or it's vice versa, circumference to diameter.
Circumference of the something and the...
But what's... Well, the reason it's an interesting number is because it doesn't matter what size the circle is.
Right.
It's just... It's a constant.
And, yeah, and it can teach you about cycles and science.
Yeah.
And
it's a good number. Everybody should know
number.
Pi. Don't the kids... Do the kids do that? Memorize on Pi Day? Do they memorize pi? They used to do it when Abby was little.
My family has been working on it. That's what we did this weekend.
We did it in
get
school.
The highest number.
Abby like learned it to like 30 or 40 places in like fourth grade in school. A lot of good it did her. It's just a fun thing to do. Actually, you know what? Practicing memorization is probably a good thing.
It is. All right. So a few weeks ago, we talked about someone was looking for a way to lock just Instagram or lock just Facebook.
Specific apps.
On there. And then we got to talking about how you didn't want people to look at your photos.
Yeah.
So Ben wrote in write in a follow-up regarding locking apps. Guided access doesn't allow you to lock someone out of an app, but rather lock them in
right.
one.
Right.
I feel like I learned this on a Twitch show, but since the last time I've used it, it's gained some interesting features. Under the accessibility option, you can set a triple click of the home button to turn on guided access, and now it gives you the option as to what a person would actually be allowed to do, but you can also now block access to certain sections of the screen.
So this is really the kid mode, where you would launch Angry Birds, but not let the kid exit Angry Birds.
Right. So let's say like you were trying to get somewhere, and you were in the Maps app.
And you don't want any other app to pop up.
Yeah, you didn't, like...
That's actually a good use for it.
Like, yeah, you're, you know...
You give it to your spouse.
Yeah. Or your friend that you don't want to look at your pictures, and then they can't get into your photo.
Right.
Photo app. So, yeah, thanks, Ben. So, he suggests that you can lock yourself into one album. I tried that, and that didn't work. Once you're in the photo app, even if you turn on guided access...
So, triple tap the home button to get into it.
So there we go.
So you're in there and you triple tap.
Guided access started.
Now, you can't get out of
right.
but can you
then I can,
photos,
you know,
but you
I
can
see
other albums.
Yeah, I can't. I have to triple click and then enter my passcode,
right.
which I am not going to tell you people.
Because that way you could look at her pictures.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I show anyway. It's just a picture of Tony in the smart bra. Nothing embarrassing about that. It's just a smart bra. Thank you, Ben.
We all wear them.
All right, Keith.
Well, no, I don't wear a smart one, but.
Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have brought it back up, but that I was asking for it. That was my own fault.
Keith, I think that's a good line, though. Just we all wear them. Good line.
Keith wants to know. I wonder if you have any suggestions for a good mind mapping app for iOS and Mac OS, if possible.
There's a lot of them.
We had this discussion last night. You don't like mind mapping. You have a mind that refuses to be mapped, and anyone listening to you for more than 5 minutes knows this.
It's a useful brainstorming tool. The idea is you dump out ideas, and then you map the connections, and it gives you a sense of visual cue as to how things are connected. Go ahead and there's a whole lot of this, and I think this goes way back to the earliest days of Macintosh or maybe even the Apple II, probably the Macintosh where people first got a graphical interface and the first thing they thought is mind mapping. So there have been mind map programs galore. So go ahead and show them some, and then I'll show you what I use. that it's a similar idea.
So here, this one is called, this one
My node, is it?
Called, what is this
Something
one
node.
Called? Let's see. This one is called...
Something.
Mind. Simple mind.
Simple mind.
Simple mind.
That's the problem. My mind is not simple.
Simple mind. And so it's pretty basic. You can just add stuff Leo likes.
Stuff Leo likes.
Quinoa. Did I spell quinoa right?
So the idea is, you see, you're building kind of this
like
tree.
This, yeah, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about fun. We'll talk about games.
Yeah.
We'll talk about photo apps. And so this one is free, and it's pretty basic. The one that I asked
free
you
is
about,
good, because you want to try this before you buy, to be honest.
Right, because there was one that I asked you
expensive.
About that was pretty expensive, yeah. And you said that you had
I've tried it. In fact,
it
I probably...
Mind Node.
Mind Node. I probably have it in a... somewhere I have a pass, you know, actually I should see if I can download it here.
So I it also has a Mac
I think I did
app.
It on the Mac.
Yeah, and yeah. And you can do a free trial on the Mac app. So
okay.
I did that, and it was not that different than Simple Mind. It was maybe a little bit prettier. But it's $29.99 for the Mac, for the full version.
So it's a good idea to try before you buy,
right.
I would say.
So that's
say.
What it looks like. It's not that different than the Simple Mind, the one I just showed you. You can add stickers and photos and those kinds of things. But it brings up a good point about no trial versions of apps in the iOS App Store, which is endlessly frustrating.
Well, and one of the ways they've solved that, of course, is with in-app purchases. But that isn't exactly the solution, because you could do an in-app purchase, but how do you give a free version with enough functionality to test it, and then the in-app... Some apps don't lend themselves well to that, like... You can't give enough functionality to really try it in such a way that a $5 in-app purchase will unlock the full version.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of developers say, no, we want demo. We want, and like you do on a desktop computer where you download a version and you can use it for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why Apple, and then it either stops working or it has limited functionality until you pay for it. I don't understand why Apple doesn't offer that.
I don't understand that either. I talked to Renee Ritchie on Friday, and he said even if they did, it would change things for a short time, but it really wouldn't, that the App Store, there's a bigger problems with the App Store.
There are massive problems with the App Store. We've talked about that a lot on Mac Break Weekly. Can I show you what I think is another alternative that you should take a look at? And by the way, it's even more expensive than Mind Node.
Sure.
You know about Prezi, of course.
Yes.
Prezi.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's more than a mind mapping app. It's really designed to be a presentation app, a replacement for PowerPoint or Keynote. And it's a weird presentation app. I know they use it. Does Marco use it? They use it at school.
Mm-hmm.
What's nice is people are so numbed to PowerPoint presentations and even to some degree to Keynote. That, you know, you put up slides and they go, and they fall asleep. But Prezi is designed to help you brainstorm and create a presentation. I'll show you some. Oh, these are my Prezis. I had a Prezi account. It's, I think, $150 a year. It's very expensive for a long time. But the idea of Prezi is that you can, I should minimize it and you can see. You can do kind of a mind map. You could put in a bunch of stuff and connect it. And then you create a path to navigate through it. So that it becomes a presentation. Let me, now it's turned sideways. Help me, Mr. Wizard. There we go. So now I have a presentation. Whoa, did you see that? This is something I gave on a Mac Mania cruise a few years ago. And so these were really, in effect, notes that I just wrote out and then connected by a flow. And the flow can be wild. It doesn't just have to move around. Sometimes it spins around. You could even zoom in, so you could have notes within notes that are smaller within the notes. The other thing, and the reason a lot of schools use Prezi, is you can even modify a slide. You can talk with the class and say, well, what are some other ideas? And add to the presentation as you're presenting it, which is, I think, a very cool idea. You can always zoom in or zoom out at any time. This is Prezi. You can try it for free, but if you're going to start using it for big presentations, you're going to see that it's a fairly pricey tool because you subscribe to it. It uses cloud storage. That's why I was able to quickly get to this presentation, by the way, because it's been a long time since I actually even looked at this, but because it's stored in the Prezi cloud, I always have access to it. So this is a little talk I gave about how to use social media. And you can see, I'll tell you what, it was a mistake to do this on a boat. It made people a little seasick as we kind of zip around like this. But it does get the eye. It does get the eye. You know, you there's nothing boring about it, right? So I would say if you're interested in mind mapping, take a look at Prezi if you're going to be ending up at doing anything like presenting those mind maps at some point. It allows you to do kind of very free-form thoughts and layout. In fact, they even say that there. It's a conversation as much as a presentation that you can modify on the fly.
So, you know, for mind mapping, it depends on what you're using it for. Like, I feel like a regular old whiteboard is sometimes the best way to do this.
You should have seen our interview we did just a few minutes ago with Jake Knapp of Google Ventures. He was talking exactly about this. His book is called Sprint. Watch it if you didn't see the triangulation, because it's how Google Ventures kind of has replaced brainstorming with a new five-day process that helps startups come up with a problem and solve the problem in 5 days. And it uses whiteboards and sticky notes. Yeah. Really, I think whiteboards are fabulous.
I think so. Just having everyone in the same room and writing, just coming up with ideas.
This is where Prezi's almost like a whiteboard for your tablet. I have to say, I've never used it on an iPad Pro. This is actually a great product for the iPad Pro. I really think this is fun.
I think that if you want to just also use Google Keep, you could use Google Keep for this.
Yeah.
Like I have, I mean, just, you know, like you can't, I mean, you can, I guess you can move these things
Keep
around,
is like a scrapbook.
But yeah, like take a note, like, you know, just add Leo, and then I wanted this to be blue, and, you know, just, I don't know, just for ideas. And that's free. I think $29.99 for a mind mapping app. You better have a really good project that you're going to map out on there for it to be worth it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. This is a good presentation. I should start doing this presentation.
But Keith, let me know if that's did.
Keep is great. It's free.
Yeah.
And now that they have an iOS app, I use it much more. Lisa and I just use our shopping for shopping lists.
I love
things
Keith.
Like that, because you could share your notes with others.
Mm-hmm. But Keith, who asked this question, if you had something completely else in mind, let us know.
But there's some good choices. MindNote is like the king of the hill. That's the power tool, but it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some other things
that's
around
simple
it.
Mind. Keep,
use.
Whiteboard.
That is a whiteboard, really, isn't it? That's an electronic scrapbook.
Yeah.
It's very much like a whiteboard. Keep.
All right, we have a voicemail that we got.
Oh, somebody mentioned Inspiration. I forgot to mention
Inspiration.
That is kind of the godfather of mind mapping apps. That one's been around for a long time. It's on Mac and iOS. And Windows, too. Yeah. Inspiration.
All right. Do we have a voicemail?
Let's hear
Leo
the voicemail.
And Megan, this is Steve from New Hampshire, and I had a question about OneSafe. It's a new app that, or I don't know if it's new or not, but Apple is highlighting it in their App Store right now and made it free. And I was curious how it compares against 1Password and LastPass and even Apple's Keychain. And I use that all my stuff because I have all Apple devices. I love Keychain. I think it works just fine for me. But I didn't know if OneSafe was worth it, and can I trust it? I've never really heard of it, so curious to see what you guys think. Thanks a lot.
So I hadn't either, and I've tried a lot of password-safe applications. So instead of answering your question, we decided to kind of shift this into how to vet a password safe. So let's say the first thing is that a password safe is probably better than any other solution that you're using, like writing it down, putting post-it notes. We all have passwords. We all need to keep track of those passwords. Most people solve this problem by having a single password they use on every site or maybe slightly modified. That is a very, very bad idea. When a site gets breached, and it happens all the time, then the bad guy has your password, and suddenly he tries it everywhere else, and oh, lo and behold, I can get it everywhere. Now, a password safe, and there are lots of them, does two things. One, it helps you generate a unique password for every site. It helps you generate a strong password, because a strong password is not a memorable password. It is a random combination of letters and numbers and punctuation that you couldn't remember for the life of you. Without a password safe, you're just not going to use strong passwords. So it'll generate one and keep track of it. And then all you have to remember is one password. That's why this is aptly named, isn't it? One password to get into your password vault. There are risks associated, and this is why we've got to vet these carefully, because now that password vault has all your secrets. And if it's not properly designed and properly secured, it's an even higher risk because if somebody gets into your vault, they own you. So you absolutely want to use a password vault, but you want to use one that is done right. And we have looked at and mentioned a number of them. LastPass is our go-to. Steve Gibson, our security guy, has given it a complete thorough check. I have, too. I've been using it for years. We trust it so much we even use it company-wide as our enterprise solution. I think 1Password is very good, and a lot of Mac users use it because it was originally a Mac app. It's on iOS. 1Password has one advantage over LastPass, which is that you don't have to store your password vault on their servers. With LastPass, the vault is stored on their servers. That's a form of vulnerability because if somebody breaks into LastPass servers, they can get all the password vaults and then at their leisure try to break into them. With 1Password, you don't store it on 1Password servers, but that makes you responsible. You may end up using Dropbox. I don't know if that's a better choice or a worse choice than storing it on 1Password. But you can also have it locally. You can have a Wi-Fi sync. So there's a real advantage in that case to 1Password. Here's what I look for in a password vault. First, I'll start with convenience, and then we'll get to security. It's got to work everywhere you work. So he mentioned Keychain. That's a great choice. Apple has done Keychain exactly right. It's strong. It's secure. It's convenient if you only use iOS and OS X. It's completely inconvenient if you ever use anything else because you don't have access to it. Once they added Keychain Sync, that made it really a good thing for iOS. So I have nothing against Keychain. Apple has implemented it right. You are the only one who has a copy of your Keychain. Now, synchronization raises some interesting questions. Are they storing a copy and then synchronizing? I'm not sure. That's something we'd have to look into. Those are the kinds of things you want to research. I look for a password manager that works on iOS, Android, Windows, and Mac, and preferably Linux, because I use all five operating systems. If a password manager works on all five of those, that makes me happy. I look for convenience, and this doesn't work on iOS, but in a browser, it's got to support all the browsers you use, too. It will autofill when you go to a website. Don't you want that? Mm-hmm. So look for something that will autofill in a website that's log you in automatically. On Android, that works also with LastPass will autofill apps, too. You'd love it if it would autofill apps instead of just websites because then, you know, you download Instagram or Prezi, as I just did, and I don't have to manually enter in my password. It just fills it in. So I'm looking for all of that. Those are all convenience factors. There's some additional ones LastPass has that, to my knowledge, nobody else does. For instance, LastPass allows you to designate an emergency contact. This is really important. If something should happen to you, you want your next of kin, your spouse, or your attorney, or your executor of your estate to have access to all your stuff, right? You don't want that to all be a locked box. So LastPass has an emergency access. You can designate one or more people as an emergency access person. And then there's a great mechanism to keep them from just kind of randomly going into your password. They have to request access. You get sent an email. And then you set a time frame that allows you the time to respond to that email. You could set it to 1 hour or a week or a day. And so if I'm dead, I have it set. So if I die, Lisa can then go to LastPass, say I would like access to Leah's vault, and I've designated her. So they say, okay, we'll send Leo an email. And then I set it so that if I don't respond within a day, I must be dead. And then you should have access to it. So that's a really good convenience feature. That seems, I think that's unique to LastPass. They just added it in version 4. There are other additional convenience features that are nice. 1Password has an authenticator built into it. It doesn't do two-factor. And I think it has some good reasons why they don't do two-factor. LastPass does. So if you want two-factor, you'd use LastPass. If you don't want it, you'd use 1Pass. But 1Pass does authentication. I don't think that's a good idea because then your authenticator is the same thing as your password vault. That doesn't really give you good security. But the main thing you're looking at is how do they store your data? Where do they store your data? Who has access to your data? So let's do that for OneSafe. Okay. So the first thing I do is, well, who is OneSafe? They're a Singapore company. That could give you cause for concern or relief. You don't have to worry about it being a U.S. company that would hand over everything to law enforcement. On the other hand, it's a Singapore company. You might want to keep that in mind. Singapore not known for being the most open, transparent society. On the other hand, it looks like it's a beautiful app. And the other thing you do is go to the website, which I did. And I looked at the, homepage for OneSafe. I look at the reviews. Now, remember, and this is important, most of these reviewers are not security experts. So a review is going to review features, usability, convenience. It may not accurately review the security. You know, that's where I want a Steve Gibson involved. But I tell you what Steve would look at. He'd go to the security tab, and let's look at the security tab and see how they store your passwords. Good. AES-256. That's really good. That means they're using not a roll-your-own encryption, but actual, true, strong encryption. They're using a long key, 256 bits. That's good. And here's something I always look for that I love, PBKDF2. Now, Steve will explain this better than I do, but it makes it harder to brute force your one and only password that opens up your vault. Now, they explain how it works here, but this is a very valuable technology and certainly a big check mark for OneSafe that they use PBKDF2. Of course, they've got to implement it properly and everything. One thing, though, that I would keep in mind, in terms of convenience, notice it does work on iPhone, iPad, Mac, Android, Windows Phone, and Windows 8.1. But, and I haven't dug deep enough, in order to do that, it looks like they store your password vault on their servers. You know, that's what LastPass does, too. That's how you get that kind of convenience of being cross-platform. But that may be something that cause for concern. It's one thing 1Password does not. They offer, for convenience, some very poor alternatives for securing your vault. For instance, a 4-digit PIN. That's convenient, or even worse, a visual pattern.
What's wrong with the visual pattern?
Very easy to guess. So I strongly recommend you always use an alphanumeric password and make it long. This is the keys to the kingdom, is this password. You got to make it memorable or memorize it, because that's the 1Password you have to remember with any password vault. But by all means, it should be 16 random characters, digits, and punctuation. It's got to be very complicated.
So they're having giving you the opportunity to have something less
secure.
Yeah,
1Password does this too. They allow choices that would be less secure. 1Password, for instance, allows you to have your password vault visible on the web. Not a good idea. Mm-hmm. In fact, it did give offer a way to leak information about the sites that you have access to that Steve Gibson considered a real flaw in 1Password. Doesn't mean you have to use that. In fact, we talked about this. Don't use the 1Password was using an old format OP vault. We recommend using the Agile keychain instead. We've talked about that on this show. Mm-hmm. So many companies do offer you more convenient but less secure options. I wouldn't grade them down for that, but I sure wouldn't use them.
They offer this try pin thing that I have up on my screen.
Don't do that either.
I have no idea what that is.
Well, the idea is it's a pin, but it's a pin where the pattern isn't memorizable because it moves the color shapes around. So it's better than a pin, but not as good as a password. It might be as good as a password.
I don't even really know what's going on here.
Right. Well, you have to set up a pin first, and then you will have to. It's a combination of shapes, colors, and numbers.
Okay.
And the thing is, it's not always with a pin. The numbers are always in the same position. You go 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1,
Got it. Well, someone hopefully has that, and they can get all the passwords.
They do some good things with if you can set it so that after three unsuccessful attempts, it'll lock the vault for 30 seconds. You can even have it to self-destruct if people try too hard. That's what the iPhone does. Mm-hmm. That's a nice feature. You can export, which is important. They have password reminders. Sometimes that's not such a good idea. You want to look for things like if you ever use a password vault that gave you secret questions as a way to authenticate, run away from
this. One asks you get to make up the secret questions. So
doesn't make it any better.
If you
secret
made
questions
up a fake
question. Are an avenue for social engineering. So that's not a good idea. Password recovery is a real issue on these password vaults because, of course, if you forget your password, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
The best way to do it would be say, no, I can't recover your password. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But all of them have some form of password recovery. LastPass is best. They don't actually have your password, but they have a way for you to regenerate it. 1Password has a good system. That's another one to watch out for. You really can get into trouble with social engineering with secret questions because a guy could say, oh, God, what was it? The secret question, and then unfortunately you'll get customer service reps to say, it was about your you know, when you were young, you had a... Did I have a dog? Yes. What was the name of my dog? Was it Rags? No. Was it Fida? You gotta be. That's an avenue for social engineering. A good password is 1*AD B37912 random. That's what you want. This one looks good. I mean, everything I see on here looks good. I'd have to dive pretty deeply, but yes, I would say OneSafe is fine. But we know Steve Gibson's approved LastPass, great choice. 1Password with a couple of caveats, great choice. I don't see a need to dive too much farther beyond that.
Right, and this one is free now in the App Store, but as you said, you still, if you're going to use it on your computer, you have to pay anyway. So
we, our bank requires secret questions. Lisa was setting it up the other day, and I said, okay, well, here's how you handle secret questions. You use your password vault to generate long, random passwords, and you put the answers to the secret questions are those. That's impossible to guess, but you got to make sure you put those in the vault, too, in the notes section so that you know what the answers are, because never, ever, the worst thing to do is to give the actual right answer to the secret question. What street did I grow up on? And then actually say the name of the street. That's the worst thing you can do. Make a crazy answer is good. The best is use a password, a random password, like you would use a regular password. If they make you do secret questions, do that.
All right. Well, if you have questions, you can email us at iostoday@twit.tv. You can also call us 757-504-iPad. That's 757-504-4723. And now let's talk a little bit about
your website.
Your website.
My website, leoville.com. I put some new pictures up there. I love this. This is the cover page of on Squarespace. So I started with the Squarespace cover page feature, which is a nice way to just make a single page that has, you see, it has my PGP key, my Facebook login, you know, my Facebook account, my Twitter, my Instagram, my YouTube, some information about me, some images. This was easy to set up. You set this up in 20 minutes. Very affordable. But then I got a little deeper. I said, well, I should put my blog there, so I move my blog over. I should put my photos there, so I move my photos over. I should put my calendar there. I move my calendar over. I love Squarespace. Now, I haven't done a whole lot with design on this, as you can see, but that's the beauty part. You start with a Squarespace template. It looks good just out of the box. Someday I'll sit down, I'll customize it even more. I think this looks pretty great. I wanted something simple that just kind of gave you the stuff that I want to give you. And it did it for me. Now, the nice thing is every site, including mine, is mobile responsive. So if you look at this on a 4-inch screen or a 70-inch screen, it's going to look great no matter what. Every set has commerce built into it. All this stuff is hard to do. Squarespace gets the best designers and the best engineers to do each template. So you're going to start with the template. By the way, it is also the hosting. And because the software is so tightly connected to the hosting, it's the best hosting out there. It never goes down. It's completely responsive. So if you suddenly get to be very popular, don't worry. Your site will go spin up more instances, and it can handle as much traffic as you throw at it. It's great for commerce. It's the only site I know that really your shopping cart doesn't look like a kind of a dopey add-on, you know, some ugly add-on. It's the same design as your site. It fits your design. And security, awesome, because they do the patches. You're not responsible for patching your software. You will love Squarespace. And if you want to get geeky, you can get as geeky as you want. You can even get the developer's account and turn on the developer's system, and now you can write your own HTML and CSS and JavaScript and do anything you want, even use SFTP and Git. I love it. Of course it's secure, 128-bit secure. It's Squarespace. Start your free trial right now. Just go to squarespace.com, get started. The help team is, the customer service team is really good there too, by the way. If you ever have any questions, they are so good at walking you through it. If you decide you like it and you want to buy a site, buy a year. That's what I do. When you get a year, you get a free domain name, and you can use our offer code IOSTODAY, and you'll get 10% off, and that's really big savings. 10% off with the offer code IOSTODAY. I love Squarespace. I don't know what took me so long. It's the best ever. You're going to love it, too. Whether you're a business or an individual, you're going to love Squarespace. Squarespace.com. Don't forget the offer code IOSTODAY when you sign up. Squarespace. You should. Is it time for hats?
It's time for that time in the show where we wear a funny hat and we talk about our favorite app of the week.
I used to wear this hat when I was a kid. So do you.
Yeah, I wore this hat when I was a kid.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. I was in high school, and I had a fantasy that Mao Zedong and Chinese communism were the future.
That was you really wore that hat as a kid?
I used to carry a little red book, too.
That's fascinating.
I was wrong.
But
I freely admit it.
We were all wrong about a lot of things.
We were wrong about a lot of things back then, but I still have the hat, and I love it.
All right. Well, my app is on the Apple TV.
Good. I love
is
that.
Here, and since we've been talking about...
By the way, March Madness on the Apple TV, if you're watching the NCAA tournament, the split screen, and I can't wait for baseball. They're going to do the same thing. Remember they showed that when they announced Apple TV 4? This is the way to watch sports. Awesome.
Okay.
Just a little plug there.
Little plug. All right. Since we were talking about activity trackers, I found this new fitness app that I really like. It's called Streaks, and we talked about Streaks. Talk about Streaks.
I love Streaks, and I use Streaks.
Where you
thank
can,
you.
You know, for
you
all...
set a streak. So like I have a streak, eat a healthy meal, work out for an hour, and these things really encourage... This is another thing, like a fitness tracker. Really encourages you to get good behavior.
Right. Well, so this is just for working out. Streaks workout.
Oh, I gotta get
this. And here
it
is. If you don't want to go to the gym and you don't want to get any equipment...
You just sit in front of your TV.
You sit in front of your TV. It's also on your
iPad. I should do this.
So you can... Which exercises do you like?
I'll do these.
Knee raises?
Knee raises.
You're
going to
really
that.
Do that?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, go. That's not what's intended. What is your
That's
what is
not
your,
a knee raise?
What does your blaze say?
So I got to do, like, higher?
Yeah. And now just move on to squats. Lunges.
I am getting such a good workout.
All right. So you get to select
from all
And then
when you finished it, you tap the remote.
Yes. So you get to select from all of these. Lunges, squats, mountain climbers. Do you like the burpee?
Oh, burpees.
Everybody
Those are
loves
great
the
exercise.
Burpee. Jumping
Man.
Jacks, squat jumps. So you just donkey kicks. Everybody loves
What's
a little
donkey kick? Oh, the side kicks. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the kicking back is the donkey kick.
Kicking back. Oh,
yeah,
like how fun.
Yeah.
We call those hydrant.
Hmm. So I did this workout just this morning, and I really enjoyed it. So I choose the exercises and I want
so
to
do quick
every day.
Oh, so this is like the 7-minute workout if you want.
Right, but you get to choose and it randomly gives you
And this is free.
This is not free. This is $2.99.
Oh, $2.99.
But $2.99 is the new
It's free,
free.
To me because you bought it on my system, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I own it already.
You do own it already.
Nice.
So then it tells you what exercises you're going to do and you just press the remote.
Those lying hip raises. Man, they're such liars. Superman. Mm-hmm. I can do that.
Yeah. So then you just click when you're done, and it tells you, let's go through this. And
this is nice, because this is kind of embarrassing-looking exercises, but you're doing this in the privacy of your own home.
Unless,
like the glute bridge. You don't really want to do a glute bridge in public.
I was thinking of starting this at work, though, having everyone
gather
bridges? Around the... Maybe not the... Maybe we won't start with the... Maybe we'll start with the hip raises.
Hip raises. That's a good
Although
idea.
We're all friends here. You click through, and then it'll tell you your streak when you're done.
Wow.
I
want to do this. This is great.
I played a little music when
$2.99,
I did it.
Right?
$2.99.
That's cheaper than a gym membership.
It sure is.
Yeah.
And it's random, which is what I like, because I get bored. And then it'll tell you how often
I think you're supposed to do the exercise before you click the button.
I already did it this morning. You think you are?
Okay. Just
well, you're going to do it, right?
A tip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think we're done, and it'll show you how great we did. Didn't we do great?
Wow. Workout complete. You did it all in 2 seconds. This is your best daily streak. Keep your streak alive. This is great.
Mm-hmm,
calisthenics actually are great. People kind of spend a lot of money on equipment and watches. And,
yeah. Maybe
really, just calisthenics is all you need.
Right. Maybe a mat if you have a wood floor. You might need that.
Yeah.
And just your go-get-em attitude. That's all you need. Streaks
Pretend
workout.
Pretend you're Jane Fonda. So I was looking for an app cap, and of course, what I like to do is I go to the store and I look at the editor's choices and stuff. And they have a category today on the store which I really like, which is indie games. I'm always interested not in what Epic and EA and the mainstream game companies are doing, but what the indies are doing because they tend to be a little more innovative. And this looks great. It's called Her Story, and it's a mystery. And it's one of those games, and if you like this kind, unfortunately, I don't know if this is a bug in the game or in my iPad or what, but it refuses to rotate. So I have to manually turn the screen around, which doesn't work so well with this stand. But when it launches in what looks like Windows, right? I mean, it looks like I'm in a Windows machine here. Let me plug the speaker in so you can hear it. Her Story is written by a guy, unfortunately, which kind of... But
Most of her stories are, unfortunately.
It's a mystery which you are solving. And as we start up, we say, well, your law, it doesn't tell you anything. Nothing. This is the first screen you see. What am I doing? Am I running Windows here? What's the story? And so you have to just kind of guess and click around and figure out what's going on. Well, what's in the, by the way, it's not a trash can. It's a rubbish bin. What's in the rubbish bin? Oh, hack info.
What? Right there in the rubbish bin.
I think this might be an about box. One for the mums here. Classic two-player strategy for lunchtime gaming. All right. There might be some clues in there. Here's another game you can play. Just this is a, in the trash bin. There's a little reversey game. Okay. Here's really read me text. Here's the database I filed a Freedom of Information form to get your guest access. So, if you like the idea of like maybe you're a hacker and you got into a computer and you're trying to figure out what's going on. Wait a minute. Here's a video. Let's see.
You think it's murder?
What?
I mean, clearly it's murder.
Hmm. Let's see. It looks like an interrogation room.
1994.
This is an... Oh, let's see. Play. She's in a T-shirt. This is later. This is a few days later.
February? I mean, that was months ago. It's got to do with Simon's murder.
Do you like mysteries like this?
I do.
Were you kind of piecing it together? No instructions. Settings, no subtitles, glare filter. Well, that's not going to help me much. Clips stored in user session. Logic, you're logged in. Well, what's under here? Quit this session? Well, maybe. That might be a mistake. No, I guess it was. I better log my session in again. Whew, I'm glad I could do that. What does log off do? No, that's another one. But I want to see what's under here. Can I? Oh. Southeast Constabulary. Here's a clock. It's 2016, June 16th, British time, right? And obviously the constable wants to go to Hawaii. What's the DB checker? One volume missing. Refresh. So I haven't gotten very far in this, as you can see, but I feel like this might be a really interesting... Should we try some other search terms besides murder? What do you want? A crime? Let's see some other search terms. No? How about burglary? Robber. Oh, assault. Let's do assault. Don't you feel like that, you know, you're kind of hacking in and, yeah, not doing a very good job here.
How about password?
Oh, see, here's some previous ones. Let's go back to murder. That seemed to be the most valuable. Anyway, you get the idea. Well, or do you?
I
don't know. It's called Her Story, and... it's a mystery.
In 1994.
You get to solve. 1994. Mm-hmm. I feel like this could be the future of TV shows, don't you?
Just trying to figure it out as you go along.
From the creator of Silent Hill, which was a lot of fun. That's Viva Seifert is the actress. Listen to her words.
To listen to her words, Leo.
Yes.
Listen to her words.
No means no. I learned that much. Search the database. Maybe this will give me a clue what other things to search for. Murder's the first one. I think TV... Don't you think, like, CSI could be designed like this?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that you could kind of delve into a TV show in a kind of in a unique way. I want to see more and more of this stuff.
Have you played that on your Alexa yet? On your Amazon Echo?
There's a CSI game on the Echo?
You can figure out... the murder of Batman's parents.
Oh, I did see that.
You did that. Yeah, we tried that.
Is it fun?
It's okay. It entertained us for a short period of time.
I really want to do this. I don't know what the venue would be, but it's easy to write Alexa apps.
Mm-hmm.
And Amazon gives you all the tools. It's very inexpensive to make a public one, but a private one would be almost nothing because you pay for each query, but it's less than a cent. It's really fun. And so one of the reasons Alexa keeps getting new skills is because it's easy to write them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but all the skills are not created equal.
Hmm.
Well, that brings us to the end.
That's
of
my
our
app
show.
Cap. It's called Her Story.
Her Story. I'm going to check that
Brand
out.
Brand new.
I want to thank Tony for being our model today. And he also does our show notes.
He's
keeps
a
up
brave
with our
man.
Show and just helps a whole lot.
He's the greatest.
So thank you. Tony Not Wang. Just for wearing the smart bra, but for all that you do for Iowa
For being
today.
Tony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And next week, we'll be here at 10 a.m. talking.
Yeah. But after, now, the good news is the event will end before iOS Today. So our iOS Today next week will be talking about, I hope, new iPad, new watch bands, new iPhone. There's going to be a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So we'll have a special show right after our rebroadcast or our analysis of the Apple event.
And yeah, then we'll get some new stuff, right?
On iOS Today. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.